supporting WHYY Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
Welcome to You Bet Your Garden from WHYY in Philadelphia. I am your host, Mike McGrath, and we have a very interesting question of the week for you. Hummingbirds are the jeweled treasures of any garden that they show up in, but they have many predators, including the praying mantis and wasps and yellow jackets that not only compete for food, but sting the little birdies. What can you do to protect these winged wonders? We'll tell you after lots of your fascinating phone calls at 1-888-346-9499. John, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Thanks for having me, Mike. First time caller.
Well, thanks for being had, John. Where are you?
I'm in Allentown, Pennsylvania.
I know where that is. What can we do for John in the Queen City?
I have no idea. I just moved there a few years ago.
I've totally confused you already. What can we do for you, John?
So I'm trying to make an edible landscape, and I've ordered a bunch of currant plants, gooseberries, raspberries, honeyberries. Not that I'm going to eat this stuff, but at least the critters in my neighborhood can eat it. And it was supposed to be shipping in the spring, which I assumed was going to be middle of April, late April. And when I checked my email, it's supposed to arrive on Friday.
Ha!
And a lot of these plants are supposed to be coming bare root.
Okay, that's good.
I don't know what to do with them now.
Okay. I am surprised. Who did you order them from?
Gurney's.
Okay. I'm surprised that they're shipping them that early because generally these big companies keep track of the USDA growing zones and the weather conditions. Now, I will also say that a couple of winters ago, when we didn't have this hellish levels of ice and snow and the ground wasn't so cold, and the month of March was much more normal, that wouldn't have been a bad idea because these things are not tomato plants. None of the things you mentioned are tropical. These are all plants that are very hardy in our area. Your challenge is going to be waiting until the soil is dry enough to plant. One thing that a lot of people don't realize, and you're saving a lot of gardens here with this question, is you should not work wet soil. But bare root plants, in this case, I think are going to be a lot easier to keep alive than if they were coming in a pot. Bare root simply means that. Their roots are naked and the plants are dormant. So when they get to you, open them up and then get a spritzer. You can even just get a cheap, something that'll mist water, and give them a little misting. Keep the boxes open. And then do you have like a cool basement or something like that?
Yeah, I have a place where I can store them like that.
Yes. So give them, they'll be a little dried out, and we don't want to make them go forever without any kind of moisture. So just give them a little spritzing and then keep checking the soil. When the top level of soil is dry enough to work, and in this case, you should delay more than you should rush into it because you had a lot of snow and it's going to take a long time for that moisture to work its way down in the soil. Certainly don't water. And then when it comes to be planting time, I'll teach you a trick with bare roots that's going to double your chances of survival. When you go out to the garden and you get ready to plant your plants, 2-3 hours beforehand, take each plant and put their roots in a bucket of cool, clean water and just let them sit in that bucket of water for like 3-4 hours before you plant them. And if it's a very bright and sunny day, plant them at the end of the day when the sun goes down. Putting them in that bucket of water will rehydrate the roots and really allow them to get started faster. And it wouldn't be unusual with bare root plants if there's some damage, some dead wood around the roots. So
okay.
You're diving in head first already, so I want you to make sure you have a nice sharp pair of pruners. And if you see anything dead on the roots, don't be afraid to prune it off. That'll also stimulate a little bit of growth. But the longer you can hold off, the better. You can't put them into waterlogged soil.
Okay. I'll take your suggestions and see what we can keep living.
And quite honestly, man, if you have to sit on them for 3 weeks, don't stress it. Just remember the basics of giving them a little moisture now and really saturating them before they go in.
All right. Well, thanks for the feedback.
All right. Good luck, John.
All right.
1-888-346-9499. Farrell, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hey, Mike. How are you today?
I am just fine, Farrell. How are you?
I'm good. When I retired, I bought some land up in the Catskill Mountains of New York State.
Beautiful country.
And, it is beautiful. And I planted about 30 trees, so mostly walnut trees, and planted some winter hardy pecans and two apples and two pears.
Okay.
Well, the apples and the pears have, in the last couple of years, have put on fruit, but I don't see any nuts on the trees yet. The first question is, when can I expect some nuts on those trees? And the second question is that I had put cages around these trees to keep the deer off. So the cages are like 4 to 5 feet away from the trunk.
Excellent.
And I would like to take those cages off this spring when I fertilize, because it's hard to keep the grass from around the base of the trunk.
Oh, okay. Yeah, you may do that. What are you fertilizing with?
The triple 10.
Oh, my God. Why?
I don't know. I think somebody told me to do it. What should I be using?
Well, first of all, you're lucky they're still alive.
Okay.
10-10-10 is obviously a strict chemical fertilizer. It's just concentrated salts. You are lucky you live in an area of such high rainfall that it's continually
right.
washing these toxic salts out of your okay. soil. But 10-10-10 shouldn't even be allowed to be sold because it's a horticultural nightmare. There is no single plant on the planet that wants equal amounts of the nutrients nitrogen, phosphorus, and potassium.
So what do you think I should give them?
Well, this is really, I keep hitting myself in the head with a board and it hurts. What should I do? And the answer for the same is just stop. Just they don't need anything from you at this
okay.
point. It would be good right. for you to keep the grass away from the root system, but not with an herbicide.
Okay. You know, we can just pull the grass.
Okay, that's good. You can also go out and get some sharp hose to do the work
yeah.
a little more effectively. And
yeah,
then
yeah.
if you can start making your own compost, you've got all these fall leaves, or mm-hmm. if you can get compost, you are welcome to both mulch and feed the trees with either shredded leaves or compost. That's all that nature ever gave them, and that's all they
okay.
need. Your two fruit trees, you said you have apples and what?
I have apples and pears, and they're doing well.
Okay. Are you pruning them?
Yes, I am.
And when are you pruning them, and what are you doing?
In the spring.
Okay, good. Now, on the apples, when the little fruits start to form, do you remove
right.
most of them?
No.
Okay. That's why you're not getting good apples. That's why you're not
okay.
getting full-size
okay.
apples. This year,
okay.
I want you to go out, and after the fruits start to form, remove half to three-quarters.
Okay.
Apple, you don't have to do that with the pears unless the branches start breaking. But
okay.
Apples need to be pruned and thinned. What kind of walnut trees do you think you have?
I bought a Carpathian walnut. Some people call them Carpathian
right.
Walnuts. Yeah, are you familiar with them?
Sure yeah, and I'm not sure that they're going to do well for you in upstate New York. I'm not sure you're really going to get fruit from them. This is an area where black walnuts do
yeah.
really well. But, you know, commercially
right.
in the United States, most walnuts are grown on the West Coast. Most
right.
eating walnuts, what we call English walnuts or stuff like
right,
that.
Right, right, right.
And if well, you're, you know, and pecans are a nut of the deep south. Okay. If we could go back in time, I would have urged you to try to get the oldest hickory trees, and which are related to pecans, and the nuts
mm-hmm.
are very good, and they are fruits of cold weather. But, you know, I'm not the world's greatest genius, so there's nothing you would need to do other than stop feeding them these chemicals. That could be delaying
okay.
things. Obviously,
okay.
If you thin your fruits this year on the apple, you have a chance of getting a really good harvest. The pears, as you've seen, they really take care of themselves.
Right.
I would not expect to get any significant kind of nut business off of them. Those really weren't the kind of nuts that you should have rolled the dice for in upstate New York.
Okay.
Hickories are the one for you, but enjoy them. Just be aware that all walnuts produce juglone in their roots and their leaves, which is...
What is that?
It's a naturally occurring chemical that's toxic to many other plants. They use it as a defense to keep other plants away. So should you have a vegetable garden or anything like that, don't plant it anywhere near the walnuts where the roots could get in, and don't use the leaves for mulch or compost.
Right. Okay, Mike.
Well, sorry, Farrell.
Very helpful.
Yeah, and hopefully you'll call me back in 5 years and say I was wrong.
Okay.
All right, good luck.
Thanks a lot, Mike.
Bye-bye.
Have a good day. I love your show.
Thank you so much. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Well, it's time for me to take a little break and announce that I will return to the Delaware Home Show at the Chase Center in Wilmington next Saturday, March 28th, delivering a talk on lovely and legal lawn care at 11 a.m. and attracting bees, birds, butterflies, and toads to your landscape at 3. But don't go looking for all the details at the events section of our website just yet, because we'll be right back to save your hummingbirds and take more of your fabulous phone calls. I'm Mike McGrath, and you're listening to You Bet Your Garden from WHYY in Philadelphia.
Support for You Bet Your Garden is provided by Burpee, celebrating their 139th year of providing treasured heirloom varieties, hardworking hybrids, fruits of all kinds, garden supplies, and more. Burpee offers no treated seed or genetically modified organisms. Information at burpee.com. And by the Espoma Company, makers of Holly Tone brand organic plant food, developed for feeding hollies, azaleas, evergreens, and other acid-loving plants. Espoma, a natural in the garden since 1929.
Welcome back to You Bet Your Garden from WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm your host, Mike McGrath. Coming up later in the show, hummingbirds are living, flying jewels of summer, but they're often attacked by predators, including mantises and wasps and yellow jackets. We'll tell you how to protect your little flying beauties after more of your fascinating phone calls at 1-888-346-9499. Karen, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hi, Mike. I'm glad to be here. Thank you so much for taking my call.
Well, thank you for making it, Karen. Where are you?
I'm in Mechanicsville, Maryland.
Okay, very good. What can we do for you?
We recently built our raised garden in our backyard out of cedar. And I was wondering, we're planning on doing an organic garden. and very confused as to what the proper layers are to put in the garden to start it. And we also are prone to having molds and bowls and wanted to know if it was appropriate to put wire mesh underneath the garden bed itself.
Okay, when you say you've built a raised bed garden, does that mean you have the frames ready to drop into place?
Yes.
And
yes.
What size?
We did about a 4x8.
Perfect. That is the absolute perfect size. You know, once you get the raised beds in place, you will not step into them. So you want to make sure in between each frame is 2 feet of walking lanes all around.
Correct.
Because you'll be surprised at how much you need every inch of those 2 feet as you move into the season. Moles, unlike what most people think, do not eat plants. Moles are not going to come up in a raised bed system. They're kind of pestiferous in lawns where they search for earthworms and grubs. Moles only eat live animal food, so to speak. Voles, on the other hand, you are right to be worried about. Voles are voracious little creatures with incredibly high metabolisms that eat the roots of plants underground in tubers, and they can be real garden pests. So do you have wood mulch around your landscape?
No, this is in our backyard away from most of our garden beds.
Well, then how do you know you have voles? I'm not saying you don't, but just tell me your evidence.
My neighbor has some, so I'm a little concerned they might migrate our way. So that was my concern.
Does your neighbor use wood mulch?
Not that I'm aware of.
And what are the voles eating over there?
I'm not sure. She just gave me a heads up that she thinks she has either moles or voles. So maybe she has the moles and not the voles.
Okay. And how tall are your raised beds?
We did them about, I want to say, 14 to 16 inches.
Oh, excellent. You go, girl. You are going to kick such butt here. This is amazing. Okay, so when you talk about layers, that's the lasagna style of gardening. That's not my style of gardening. I don't endorse that. I am a huge fan of the old style raised bed system. And it sounds like you're going to avoid one of the biggest problems. You're not going to try to grow in your native soil. You're just going to drop these frames on top and fill it with really good stuff.
Yes, correct.
Excellent, excellent. You are going to have the most productive garden instantly. The first thing you want to do, no matter what, you want to cover the entire area, both the walking lanes and the areas that the frames are going to drop on to, with a single sheet of cardboard. Drop the raised beds into place, and then the two essential elements that you mix together equally, you don't layer. You want a combination of rich black topsoil, which means that it's black when it's dry. Anything looks good when it's wet. If you have a choice of bulk suppliers, go around to each one and take like a little beach bucket or a 5-gallon bucket, take some of the topsoil, take some of the compost back, spread it out on like your driveway and let it dry. The stuff that looks black is the best. Compost, if you're buying it in bulk, you want to make sure it looks like rich black soil, smells like rich black soil, and feels like rich black soil.
Okay.
So the best combination is approximately a 50-50 mix. But if you want to invest in making this garden beyond spectacular, but super spectacular, go to a big home store and buy, how many things you're going to do? How many frames?
We're just doing one right now to see how it goes.
Oh, okay, good. Buy a big bag of perlite, P-E-R-L-I-T-E. This is a mined volcanic mineral. It's the little white balls you see in plants you get from the garden center.
Yes.
That's not styrofoam or plastic. That's a mined mineral from volcanic glass. And so approximately 50-50 of compost and topsoil with as much perlite mixed in as you're willing to do, because that's going to make the drainage superb. And then never till up that soil. Every year, just add 2 inches of fresh compost to the surface, and you will have the best garden ever.
Okay.
And on top of the lanes, you can put down anything. You can put down wood chips there or whatever to just walk on. Now, okay. If you want to line the inside with hardware cloth, you're welcome to. It may be an unnecessary expense, but that is what you would do. You would line it with not wire cage or anything, but okay. A substance called hardware cloth that has it's metal with very small openings.
Okay.
But you're going to add beds over the years, right?
I hope so, yes. That's my goal.
I'm going to suggest that since you've done such great work already, you just do the right thing, fill it up with the right mixture, and see if anything bad happens. And then if it does, you can plant stuff in there that voles don't eat, and the other beds you can line with hardware cloth.
Sounds great.
Just go for it. You can get started ahead of everybody. You don't even have to wait till your soil dries.
Yeah, I know. I'm very excited to do this year.
You're doing everything right, it sounds like.
Wonderful.
I'd wish you luck, but I don't think you need it.
Oh, thank you. Thank you very much for your help. I do appreciate it.
Oh, my pleasure. You take care.
You too. Thank you so much.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
1-888-346-9499. Archie, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Welcome, or thank you.
Well, that's all right. You can welcome me, and I'll thank you. Where are you, man?
Right. I'm in Jacksonville, North Carolina.
A little bit of heaven.
Yes, it is. It's beautiful out here today. We're playing golf in shorts and short-sleeve shirts.
You don't have to rub it in, Archie. You know,
we're only about 100 miles north of Myrtle Beach.
Yeah. But north, huh? So, you know, they have it easier even. At least there's somebody who has it better than you, right?
Yeah. Listen, the reason I called, a couple of weeks ago, I heard you talking to a gent on there who had a barren apple tree.
That is correct. He had his son had grown it from seed.
Right. Well, I'm 75 years old. And when my grandfather, before World War II, he was a professor at Ohio State in botany and forestry. When the war, just before the war broke out, he moved back to the Akron area and was the night superintendent of Sun River Company. However, he used to go around the area to all of the little farms, and every farm had a small orchard, and he would graft their trees for them, never charged them anything. I used to help him. We would do it in February. It'd be colder than bejesus out there. And he had a little tin stove that he built that used a candle to melt his beeswax.
Uh-huh.
And he would graft these trees and put beeswax on it and then tie a rag around it. And the graft would take, well, he'd go back and check on them, and then most usually his grafts would take. In fact, we had a pear tree in the backyard when I was a lad that had three different kind of pears and two different kind of apples growing off the same tree. So I was wondering why you didn't suggest this to that gentleman to have it grafted from someone that from a tree that he knew that bared that some neighbor or someone had.
Well, the God's honest answer is, Archie, that you weren't here at the time to to nudge me, and I didn't think of it. Grafting is one thing that I have not done a lot of. As a matter of fact, I'm better at cutting down fruit trees that have disappointed me. But you are absolutely right, and I know that apple trees probably take grafts better than any other tree that bears so many different varieties. I know it's easy to graft figs, but apple trees, right, as you know, there's these, you know, kind of fantasy variety apple trees out there that have all sorts of different varieties on them. And, you know, I think after you get too crazy, it's going to be difficult to prune them, or you're going to lose a couple of the varieties. But yes, and this is what the old timers would do, right? Is they would,
right,
you know, because this is a nursery technique. Typically, right, a nursery would spend, let's say, 3 years growing out a really hardy root stock. And then at one point they would lop the tops off those trees because they had lousy apples, and they would graft desired varieties onto them.
Absolutely.
And you described the old school technique very well. You make a notch, you drop the whip down into the notch, and then you seal it with beeswax. It's been a long time since I've heard about anybody using hot beeswax to do their grafts in the field on a living plant. But that is a great example of why people concentrate too much on what's new in gardening, because there is so much old knowledge and information out there, not only from your father's era, but from his father's era, from the 1800s, techniques that people came up with because there were no garden stores around. They had to they had to be handy.
Right. In fact, he even grafted pears and apples onto crabapple trees.
Right. I think I think crabapple is actually a good rootstock for a good eating apple.
Right. His what he told me was that if the seed is alike, you can graft it. That's why the pear and the apple, you could graft back and forth.
Oh, the different fruits on the same tree. Well, there's also there's also people like your father had the thumb, man. And, you know, the plants just loved to work with people who had that affinity. But that is a great possibility for our listener. If he knows again, I mean, for instance, if he wanted to grow a peach, he could come to my house. I got a million things I got to prune. And we're approaching pruning season. So if there's any fruit tree growers in his area, he doesn't even have to beg them for some whips. They're going to prune them off anyway because you got to prune apples so heavily.
Right.
And he can find some apples in his area. That's a great idea. The owners say they're really delicious apples. He could actually do himself some good by trying to graft some shoots on. And I think there's still time. It this season.
Well, I think it's a little late in the year because the sap has already started to rise.
You're in North Carolina, pal.
Right.
We're freezing to death still.
Okay.
All right, Archie, a great suggestion, grafting apple trees. I will keep that in the front of my skull from now on, sir.
Okay, have a good day.
You too. 1-888-346-9499. Deanna, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hello, thank you.
Well, thank
you. I have a question about a bluebird.
Okay. I have a question for Deanna. Where are you?
We're in Jackson's Gap, Alabama.
Jackson's Gap, Alabama. That's interesting. Is there a gap?
On Lake Martin.
Okay, very nice. It sounds lovely. All right, tell us about your bluebird.
Our house faces the lake, and it is a multiple level. In the upper deck, has a kitchen door that has a full glass the whole length of the door. This bluebird comes and sits on the railing of our upper deck, flies into the glass on the door, falls down, flies into the glass, falls down, flies into the glass, falls down. Then he'll get back up and sit on the railing. Then he'll fly into the door again and fall down. And maybe he'll do that a half a dozen times and then he'll fly away. We're just not quite able to figure it out.
Recently on the show, we had a guy on who makes bird savers. I think that's what he called them. He makes these strips of nylon parachute cord that you hang down over the windows that birds are flying into at high speed. He explained that birds, especially in certain wooded areas, they see the reflection of the woods in the window. They don't see the inside of the house. They think they're just flying through a continuous woods. So
I heard that.
These are the birds that are really banging and falling to the ground. I think you have one of the other types of interesting bird activities, in that your bird is flying onto the deck and then he's attacking your door, right? So what's going on here is this is a male bird and he sees his reflection in the doorway. What he's doing is establishing his territory. He's attacking that other male. I had a cardinal who did this forever. And there are a couple ways of getting around it. The bird savers won't stop this because they're not going to change that up-close reflection. If you go to our website, go to youbetyourgarden.org and go to Garden Answers A to Z and click under B for birds, we did a whole article about how to stop male birds from flinging themselves into your window. But if you hang a little plastic mirror nearby that he can see himself in, he'll be distracted by that. If you have shades that you can pull down, that, you know, for instance, our doors like that, we need to have shades, otherwise the sun comes blinding in at a certain time of day. Whenever he's around, if you lower those shades, he won't go into it. But whatever you can do, if you just think of that door as having become a mirror to change the fact that it's reflecting, as soon as he no longer sees himself in it, he will stop throwing himself at that other bird, and he'll just go about his merry business.
Okay.
All right. Well, good luck to you then. Bye-bye. Well, it's time for me to take a little break and warn our listeners near and far that rookie gardeners should not try and start their own plants from seed early in their plant-killing careers. Please get used to sending big summer plants over the river Styx before you move up to killing them indoors with poor light and torrents of water in March. But don't go looking for all the details under the letter S for seed starting in our Garden Answers A to Z section just yet, because we'll be right back to save your hummingbirds and take more of your fabulous phone calls. I'm Mike McGrath, and you're listening to You Bet Your Garden from WHYY in Philadelphia.
Support for You Bet Your Garden is provided by Burpee, celebrating their 139th year of providing treasured heirloom varieties, hardworking hybrids, fruits of all kinds, garden supplies, and more. Burpee offers no treated seed or genetically modified organisms. Information at burpee.com. And by the Espoma Company, makers of Holly Tone brand organic plant food, developed for feeding hollies, azaleas, evergreens, and other acid-loving plants. Espoma, a natural in the garden since 1929.
Welcome back to You Bet Your Garden from WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm your host, Mike McGrath, and we're in the stretch now, cats and kittens. In just a little bit, we will get to the details on how you can attract hummingbirds to your garden and not have them fall prey to the hungry praying mantis or to nasty stinging wasps and yellow jackets. That valuable information is coming up right after a couple more of your fascinating phone calls. At 1-888-346-9499. Donna, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hi, how are you?
I'm doing just fine. Donna, how are you?
I'm great.
And where is Donna great?
In Downingtown, Pennsylvania.
Just outside of Philadelphia. Very good. What can we do for you?
I have a plum tree that produces hundreds of plums.
Right.
But it has, I think, what is called black knot.
Yeah, that would be very distinctive. That would be, well, just like it says, black knotty areas on the branches.
That's correct, yes.
Did you plant this tree? Did you inherit it?
No, we planted the tree, and, you know, it's funny because for years we didn't get any plums. We got, like, blossoms, and we didn't get any plums. And then we finally figured out the problem, and it's, like, it's the first tree to bloom, to flower, and then it always gets the frost. So we solved that problem because now we just put a big floodlight underneath the tree, and when we hear that there's going to be frost, we turn on the floodlight, and it heats up the blossoms, and...
Oh, that's very good. That's very good. When that happens with my peaches, I put the old-style Christmas lights in them to heat them up overnight.
Yeah.
Okay, so you're getting good fruit even without another tree around.
Yes.
Okay, good. And you figured out what was going on. How old is the tree?
I'm going to say 17 years.
Okay, very good. How tall is it?
20 feet, maybe.
So you have not been pruning it to keep the size under control.
We have not.
I wish I could give you a time machine, because what we would do is we would go back in time, and right around this time of year, or anywhere from the middle of winter through early spring, we would have pruned out the first branches and destroyed them, either burned them or put them out with the trash.
Okay.
But that's what you need to be doing now, is pruning out the worst branches. Is the black knot the length of the branch? Is it halfway, or is it kind of random where it appears?
It's kind of random, and unfortunately, in some areas, it's on like the really big branches.
Right.
So we ended up. I mean, the tree had like the most beautiful shape. Well, now it's not so great anymore because we've ended up taking off those branches.
Okay, so you have pruned off the worst branches.
We've tried, but some of the worst branches now are almost like the heart of the tree. So I don't know how many branches you can prune off before you lose the tree.
Oh, quite. Yeah, with these fruit trees, quite a bit. The entire size of the tree over a course of 3 years, and it'll still be fine.
Oh,
so
okay.
I would urge you to still be aggressive with the pruning. Yeah, you might want to start mulching it with compost. And then I'll give you a choice of two sprays. One,
okay.
The most common brand name is called Surround, S-U-R-R-O-U-N-D.
Oh, we have some of that, actually.
You have the clay spray? What do you spray it on?
I have some Asian pear trees, and they told me to...
Excellent.
The Amish farmer told me to spray that for the stink bugs. It doesn't really... It's really not taking them off. But.
No. What you do... You don't spray it when the stink bugs come out. You spray it before the stink bugs appear, and then they won't.
Right.
And then they won't land on the fruit. That was a very good suggestion. That's the micronized clay spray.
Okay.
The other is an actual naturally occurring disease fighter, and that's sold under the brand name Serenade.
How do you spell that?
Serenade, like the song.
Oh, like Serenade. Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
And if you were going to use them in sequence, I would spray the Serenade first and then seal that with the clay spray.
Okay.
But if you start being aggressive on the pruning and hitting it with the clay spray, you can get beyond this. Because as you've seen, it's not killing the tree and you're still getting good fruit.
Right. Okay. Thank you so very much.
My pleasure, Donna. Good luck.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
1-888-346-9499. Dennis, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hello, Mike.
Hello, Dennis. How are you, man?
I'm doing great.
And where is Dennis doing great?
I'm in Oklahoma City, just east of Spencer, kind of out in the country.
Okay, very good. We know our listeners in Oklahoma City well. They have been putting up with me for some 14 years now. It's always a pleasure to hear from our friends out there. What can we do for Dennis near Oklahoma City?
Well, worms ate up all my pecans last year, and I was wondering what would be the best way to protect those trees.
Okay, now when you say that worms ate up your pecans, that means the actual nuts were infested with some sort of, you know, worm is the generic term, but either a caterpillar or some grub.
Right, right. They bored holes into the fruit, if you want to call the nut a fruit, and ruined it.
Well, I'm not the world's greatest botanist, but I think the stuff that covers the nut might technically be a fruit. But obviously, we talk about these things as being nuts, and it is my understanding that pecans are difficult to grow because of this pest. But you're very lucky in that there are many cures. Now, how many trees do you have?
I've got about 14.
Really? Okay.
Not counting the little ones.
Right. I hear you, man. And what do they range in size?
35 to 40 feet, I'd say.
Well, riddle me this, man. When the nuts are ready for harvest, can you reach them personally, or do you have to wait till they drop from the highest heights?
If a small enough tree, you can shake it by hand.
Right.
And I've done that before myself.
Okay. So
and some people even use long poles to reach up in there and thrash it around and knock the pecans
right.
down.
But these trees are a good age. Did you plant them or did you inherit them?
I inherited them.
Okay, very good. And what's the level of infestation? Are all your nuts ruined or is it like 10%, 50%?
I would say about 90%.
Okay. Now, and I know that your summers there can be very hot and dry, and pecans are very thirsty trees. Do you do some sort of irrigation to help them along?
No, I haven't had to do that. The biggest and best trees grow down in the valleys, close to the rivers and streams and so forth.
Oh, okay, good. So they're probably tapping into nature's water down there.
Yes.
Okay. Now, I know there's a pecan weevil. Have you had this pest identified?
No. I know that there's bagworms left their webbing in the trees, in some of the trees, but not all of them.
Okay. If you see webbing in the trees, those aren't bagworms. Bagworms make little phony pine cones in conifers. If you see webs in trees, those are either tent caterpillars in the spring or fall webworms in the fall. And they're not going into your nuts, but they're feeding on the leaves, but they are stressing the tree. So if you get a lot of these tents in your trees, it would be a good idea to get maybe a ladder and something, a pruner, a pole pruner, you know, where you can go up high and get as many of the nests out. It's not the cause of the problem, but it's stressing the tree.
Okay.
And then I want you to do a test. There is a product called Surround. Surround, and it is a clay spray. That's all it is, but it's a very specially made micronized clay. It's a white powder. You get a big backpack sprayer. I don't know if you ever spray these trees with anything, but this is a non-toxic spray, and you would mix it as directed in the backpack sprayer. And, you know, those things you can pump up. You can reach a good 20, 30 feet with a backpack sprayer. You may want to get a pressurized sprayer. But early in the season, after the fruits start forming, you want to spray them down with this Surround. It provides a physical barrier against the pests getting into the nuts. And then you do that a couple times during the season, and that should improve things tremendously. But I also want you to go to your local extension service, describe the pest to them, maybe take them a couple of samples, get it identified, and learn more about its life cycle. There may be some things you can do down at the soil line, like having chickens roam around underneath if these pests come up out of the soil and climb up the trees. Without a more definitive identification, we can only do so much here. It's better to handle these problems naturally because you don't want to kill off your beneficial insects. You know, learn the life cycle of the pest. When you ID it, you're welcome to even call us back. But I tell you, this clay spray will, at the very least, cut your problems in half the first season.
Okay.
Good luck, Dennis.
Hey, thanks, Mike.
Take care, man. All right, as promised, it's time for the question of the week. Protecting hummingbirds from predators. Alexis Landis, producer of You Bet Your Garden, read us this week's heartbreaking question.
Well, Wilma in West Philadelphia writes, I've managed to attract a colony of ruby-throated hummingbirds to my inner-city patio for the past 3 summers, but I'm having trouble with 2 predators, aggressive wasps that compete at the feeders and occasionally try and sting the birds, and a garden friend turned enemy, the praying mantis, which I understand are wonderful to have in the garden, but they are also one of the top predators of hummingbirds. Can you please give me some advice on how to deal with these problems? Michael, you have to help her.
Yes, that's how my mother used to pronounce my name when she was mad at me. That rise on the L still gives me the willies. Although it's also my Kryptonian name, so I think that...
Enough about you. How can she stop a praying mantis, a protected beneficial insect?
I also want to mention that there were much more grisly details that we haven't included out of respect for our listeners. And the praying mantis is an insect, but it is neither protected in the United States nor technically a beneficial. Although commonly felt to be true, the stories about it being illegal to harm a mantis are just that, stories. And a true beneficial insect only preys on pests. Mantises, like spiders, are predators that eat pest insects and good insects like pollinators. And when they grow to full size, move on to larger prey like small rodents, birds, and lizards.
You're not suggesting she kill or harm them, are you?
No, no way. They're amazing insects just doing what comes naturally. But a little research has led me to some helpful hints on making their job a lot harder. Well, first, she should examine the plants on her property carefully for their egg masses, especially in the fall. They're very distinctive and easy to see. She should prune off the branch or whatever any egg sacs she finds are attached to and relocate them to the crook of a tree about a mile away. You don't want to move them to another state. That would be wrong. Just another neighborhood. Second, some mantises can fly, but some can't. So she should make sure that her feeders are hanging from shepherd hooks, positioned a good distance away from any plants, and she should grease the poles so that they're difficult to climb. But before she does that, she should paint the poles red.
To attract more hummingbirds. You always say that they love the color red.
And that would be a nice side benefit here. Every part of a hummingbird feeder should be red. But this is also to help the birds. Mantises are ambush hunters that sit still for a long time to grab a meal, and they can change their color to blend in with their surroundings and become even harder to see. But I don't think any American mantises can become red, so they'd be highly visible to both the hummingbirds and their dedicated human protector if they get up on the feeder.
American mantises?
Yeah, some tropical species are naturally pinkish-red or can become that color to hunt while perched on certain orchids. And my use of the term American here is insect shorthand, as a lot of, quote, our mantises were imported from other countries for pest control and went native pretty fast, which may account for the differences, like why some can fly and some can't.
Okay, now what about the stinging wasp threat?
Yellow jackets, hornets, and bees are all well-documented pests at hummingbird feeders, as are ants and many other creatures. You can't put out sugar in the summer and not expect to attract a wide range of things with a sweet tooth. The first line of defense is to buy feeders that have what are called bee guards, feeding ports that are difficult for flying insects to use.
Now, you just mentioned ants. What about them?
Well, the grease pole may help deter them, but ants aren't any kind of threat to the birds, and they're potentially more food for them. We tend to think of hummers as only nectar feeders, but they eat a lot of small insects. And these little birds need a lot of food. Her ruby-throated hummingbirds, the only ones you're likely to see in the eastern U.S. and Canada, only weigh a few grams each, and they have to feed almost constantly to fuel their intense energy levels.
Wait, did you just mean to say ounces instead of grams?
No, these are almost impossibly tiny creatures. Even the so-called giant hummingbird of South America tops out at 20 grams, which is about two-thirds of an ounce. And their small size makes them as vulnerable as they are cute.
Will the bee guards be enough to protect them from wasps?
Well, not entirely, but they're a good start. Experts also advise wiping down the feeder's holes daily to clean up spills that can defeat the purpose of the guards. It turns out that hummingbirds actually use their little tongues to lap up nectar and sugar water, and they can be pretty sloppy eaters. I'd also put out a lot of yellow jacket and hornet traps. You can make your own or buy them commercially, but I would bait them with stinky, overripe fruit. I catch the most yellow jackets and a surprising number of nuisance flies with rotten peaches in my traps. Well, that sure was some interesting advice about protecting what just might be the coolest little birds on the planet, now wasn't it? Luckily for you, the question of the week appears in print at the Gardens Alive website. To read it over in detail, just click the link for the question of the week at our website, youbetyourgarden.org. Gardens Alive supports the You Bet Your Garden question of the week. Yikes, my producer is threatening to remove my bee guards if I don't get out of the studio. We must be out of time. But you can call us anytime at 1-888-346-9499. Or send us your email, you're tired, you're poor, you're wretched refuse teeming towards our garden shore, as long as you include your location, at garden@whyy.org. And visit our website, youbetyourgarden.org, where you'll find answers to all your garden questions, audio of this show, past shows, and our podcast. Elizabeth Perez Luna is executive producer of audio content for WHYY. Ken Queter plays our theme song. Our engineer this week is Diana Martinez. Our social media director is Amanda McGrath. Check out her fine work and like us at the You Bet Your Garden Facebook page. Rich Banowitz is You Bet Your Garden's webpage wonder. We still miss our internet she-devil, Sarah Kazar, who is off on the travel adventure of a lifetime. I wonder if she'll see any hummingbirds. Our editor, Al Banks, sees hummingbirds by the coffee machine. Alexis Landis produces You Bet Your Garden for WHYY in Philadelphia and does not drink coffee. We know for a fact that our hired hand, Matt Hudecki, could not live outside of driving distance to a Wawa. The coffee needs of our intern, Farah Alikut, are unknown. But if I had to work with me, I'd buy stock in Starbucks. I would say call me Ishmael here, but, well, I just said it now, didn't I? Anyway, is the snow melted yet? Brew a fresh pot of Celebes Colossi. Make fast the French roast. We seek the white whale. Or maybe it's white tomatoes. How did we get from hummingbirds to whales? What's going on around here? Anyway, I am your captain, Mike McGrath. And where's that coffee? Ishmael, hello, I am calling you now. And I can't wait on that dark roast until I see these fine listeners again next week. A new list of the most heavily sprayed fruits and vegetables in the supermarket has people worried. I'm Mike McGrath, and on the next You Bet Your Garden, we'll tell you the easiest members of the Dirty Dozen to grow on your own. Plus your fabulous phone calls.